Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours. I'm author Brent Thomas, and join with me as I read from the second novel of my Deadly Troubadours series, Sand, Sea, and Stone. Let's begin, shall we? Chapter 10, Day 2, Morning. Alexander woke up first. He hummed to himself as he crawled off the slim stuffed mattress that served as his bed. He liked sleeping on the floor, but needed a hint of softness to stay comfortable through the night. On the other side of the room, Demetrius slept on a cushion so thick and spongy, he was practically sinking into it. Alexander could not see how the little mage could be comfortable on such a mattress. He would feel as if he were being smothered from all sides. Just thinking about it made him shudder slightly. Truth be told, to him the perfect bed was thick grass underneath shimmering stars. But grass that hadn't been trodden down was hard to find in Trist, so he contented himself with the knowledge that inside he would never be woken up by a sudden rainstorm. He slunk out of the room and down the narrow stairs. Their communal dwelling was three stories. The top floor was Kestra's. That was understood and accepted by all. No one went in without her permission. That was the rule. Since it was just a single room that by many would have been considered little more than an attic, there were no hard feelings about her having the most personal space. The boys shared a larger room on the second floor. Alec and Demetrius curtained off separate corners for their respective mattresses. And that was where they could be found after retiring after a night's adventure. Talbert was a bit more unpredictable. The first floor not only had the most rooms, kitchen, privy, common room, but was also more commonly where Talbert tended to hang his head. He had attached two braces to the walls and often hung a simple hammock from them to sleep in. He said the gentle swaying reminded him of his childhood. Of course, the hammock took up space in their common room, and as simple as it was, it still took time to set up at night and clear away in the morning. Sometimes he couldn't be bothered and would either curl up on the couch or even throw a thick blanket down between Alexander and Demetrius. But this morning, he was in his hammock, his deep breathing and the occasional gentle snore informing the creeping Alexander that he was asleep. Alec took a moment to look down on the sleeping figure and wonder if he was dreaming or not. Alec's humming took on the tune of a Spice Islands lullaby, and he passed from the room into the kitchen. Today would be a big day for their little troop, and he wanted to see that it got off to a good start. He looked over the supplies he had prepared the night before and smiled. To get the fires hot enough and cook the meal would take about an hour, enough time for him to replay his favorite concerto in his head. It was indeed a good morning. Before the hour was up, the smells and sounds of morning had spread throughout the dwelling. There was the steady hiss of cooking eggs and sizzling ham coming from the stovetop, the percussive tat-a-tat-tat of vegetables being chopped, and, of course, Alexander tying it all together by whistling a jaunty tune that might have come across as obnoxious for this time of day, if not accompanied by the smells of grilling food, freshly baked bread, and, yes, hot coffee. Soon these smells had lured the remaining deadly troubadours out of their beds and coaxed them around their dining table. Loud talk and quick laughter announced that morning had truly started and that sleep had been defeated. Despite the talk, there was an anxiousness amongst them. Today was all planned out. All that needed to be done was to light a single fuse, and the rest would take care of itself, like clockwork, with only a little bit of tending to the finer details. They each held themselves as if there was no reason to worry, but that their concerns went unvoiced was telling. They were apprehensive. Last night's entertainment had underwhelmed. It would only be remembered for its inadequacy. They were all hoping they would not be remembered the same way. When they finished eating, Alec and Kestra took care of the dishes. Demetrius and Talbert had a few more things to prepare for the day. In a large way, much of the day would lie on Demetrius, as he had the most active role to fill. The others had been able to secure their roles in advance. "Are you sure you can do this?" Talbert asked him for what seemed to be the 100th time. Demetrius smiled at his friend. "I have no doubt." They left their dwelling with high hopes. The sweetness of the very air seemed to be cheering them along. The Rainbow Courtyard was packed with visitors. True, they didn't push back into the Violet Ring, but they certainly cleared the Blue one, indicating that today could definitely be considered a success. The weather was perfect. Warm without being hot, a cool breeze keeping the many bodies crammed into the courtyard from feeling aggressive due to the heat. There was just a thin shimmer of clouds in the sky, not enough to blot out the rich blue sky, but just enough to keep the sun from glaring off the silver pavilion. No one could ask for a better day. Currently on top of the pavilion, a lone violinist played. The sound was sweet and hopeful, a kind of innocuous uplifting melody that made you smile without reminding you too much of any particular time or place. Even Alexander found himself nodding at the choice of music, although he did feel that the performer could have done the piece a little more justice. The deadly troubadours made their way into their positions. Talbert went to the tower that he had decided would be the lead tower. As expected, the door that had been unwatched yesterday was now blocked by a rather large and intimidating Scarlet. Talbert imagined the same could be said of all the tower doors at the courtyard, but he expected that the backside of the tower, where there was no door, would be unwatched. He chewed the inside of his lip as he made his way around the tower to see if his hypothesis proved correct. He broke into a smile when he saw that it was so. Not only was there no guard watching this side of the tower, but no notice had been taken of the small line of cord that ran straight down from the top of the tower. It was no bigger than a thread of yarn, camouflaged by its dark color and nestled between the bricks that made up the tower. More than likely, no one had even noticed it, and if they did, they probably dismissed it as a bit of ivy. "The magic of the innocuous," Demetrius said as he took a seat. "Nothing suspicious, just a spectator who was content to stay in the meager shade provided by the tower before the festivities started." Talbert stifled a laugh as he thought about what the festivities would end up being. He flashed the sign to Alexander that all was in order. Alexander, in turn, passed the gesture on to Demetrius and Kestra. Kestra's role would be simple this time. Keep Demetrius safe. He was going to be the most vulnerable among them, and they wanted to make sure that he was looked after. It might not be necessary, but safe was indeed better than sorry. Together they walked into the courtyard. They would enter the crowd, deep enough to be hidden by the throng, but not deep enough to hinder a sudden escape if necessary. As they made their way about six people deep, Kestra stopped them. "This will be good enough." They were surrounded on all sides, but it was not so crowded that they felt hemmed in. They had their own little bubble of space. Kestra hoped that when the ceremony started, the expected push of people forward would leave them basically unmoved while still providing enough cover. It was hard to predict a crowd, though. She had been to mummer shows where the sudden push of an audience had felt like the squeeze of a giant. Other times, it had simply been a few polite steps forward, a natural product of increased interest. What would the Duchess of Outer Malfenza bring? Who could guess? All she could do was watch and take note of how the crowd shifted. For his part, Demetrius was doing his best to ignore the crowd. He closed his eyes, retreated inside his head to rehearse the incantations he needed. He had his sigils prepared, and many of the streamers above had been decorated accordingly. True, he had never tried a spell with this many parts before, but the basic logic of it was simple. Just a little bit of transmutation. All it was an exercise involving one of the fundamental elements of conjuring, but on a much vaster scale. He shook his head and tried to clear out notions of scale. Just keep it simple. Let it be a stack of dominoes. He didn't need to knock all the dominoes down at once. That would be impossible. All he had to do was knock down the first one and let the follow-through take the rest down. It was as simple as gravity. He breathed in, he breathed out. He ignored the crowd and told himself he was ready. From inside his doublet, he felt the little dragon squirm and tighten into a little ball. Demetrius wondered if the little beast was trying to further hide itself from the strong smell of humanity all around it. Absently, he reached in and gave its head a little pat. The dragon's warmth was reassuring. He opened his eyes and saw that Kestra was giving him a concerned look. He smiled. "Just dominoes," he whispered before shutting his eyes again in preparation for his moment. They waited as more and more people arrived and filled the rainbow courtyard. The crowd was beginning to spill into the indigo ring. Kestra didn't like how deep they were in the massive audience. She didn't want to shake Demetrius out of whatever preparations he was undergoing, but she was starting to get concerned. Just as she was about to reach for his arm and start dragging him back, the smooth sounds of the violinist gave way to a loud blast from a bugle. The ceremony was about to begin. In the distance, the hour bells began to ring out. Deep peals reverberated off distant towers, announcing that it was the top of the hour. Soon following was 12 individual chimes announcing that it was, in fact, full noon. Just as the final chime died away, the double doors atop the silver pavilion opened and out stepped the beginnings of the Malfinzen delegation. It was two of the knights taking exaggerated and stylized steps. Their armor was the same as the night before, but added to it were two poles carried on their backs, rising about a meter and a half into the air. On each pole was a flag. These were the standard bearers, and the flags mounted on their poles let all challengers know who they were facing. Traditionally, three flags were flown. The highest, the middle flag, that of Outer Malfinza, just below it would be two flags of equal height. One was to proclaim the unit being represented, the other the familial flag of the standard bearer. However, as this was a diplomatic mission, there were only two flags of equal height and stature. One was the flag of Outer Malfinza, a solid purple background with three interlocking rings of pale gray. The other flag was that of Trist, whose bottom half was green with a blue top. Scattered across the blue top were 5 7-pointed stars. The two standard bearers paraded their way to the corners of the platform. Then came the handmaidens, whose entrance brought out the first applause from the crowd. They too were tired as they had been the night before. They filed through the doors and formed a half circle on the platform, with two gaps for others to pass through. The noise from the crowd was growing louder as the first representatives of Trist appeared. Two members of the Scarlets, whose ceremonial armor marked as highly ranked officers, paraded out. What they lacked in theatricality, they made up for in efficiency as they found their spots flanking the center and standing at attention. Next came four members of the City Council, including Lord Guard Trin, whose only visible ties to the Scarlets were a red sash across his chest and the saber by his side. The crowd was screaming. A roar of excitement echoed off the walls. Kestra wished she had stopped them further back as the people behind her and Demetrius pushed them forward. He tried to block the commotion out and just focus on what was to come. Talbert scanned for Kestra and Demetrius in the crowd, but there were just too many people separating them. Still, he could find Alexander, and Alexander gestured, confirming that they were okay and all was on schedule. Soon their plan would be put into action. Soon. Up on stage, the handmaidens shifted. The two openings became one central passageway, at the end of which could be seen the Duchess. She stepped forward, prompting a surge of cheers from the crowd. To the people of Trist, she was an exotic princess from a faraway land, which wasn't exactly true, but that was the image projected. While the colors of her outfit were similar to her handmaidens, the similarities ended there. Their outfits, while hinting at femininity beneath their shapelessness, were still mostly defined by simplicity. Duchess Jatoy's gown, on the other hand, was a regal excess. Layer after layer of fine embroidered silks offered up images of all the life and beauty that could be found in a land of sunset. Animals, fantastic and real, frolicked on landscapes the people of Trist could only hope were true to Outer Malfinza. Otherwise, the world would be all the emptier for not having such breathtaking environs. At the welcome ball, Jatoy had let her natural beauty and features set her apart from the room. Here, in front of the crowd, she trusted to the traditional styles of makeup of her people. Two of her most trusted artists had spent over an hour making sure that every detail was perfect and otherworldly. Her face was pure white, the white of bleached bone. Hints of black had been added to make her gaze shine out. Already black eyes were now two perfect onyxes that burned into whomever they were cast. The curve of her bottom lip was painted with a red that roses could only aspire to, while only a single line in the center of her upper lip received the touch of red. The rest was left the same breathtaking shade of white. Underneath each eye was a single dot, two perfect black circles. Underneath those were narrow black triangles, one on either side, with the point facing down, ending just even with her nose. The effect was of a stalking cat, and enhanced both her threat of danger and her femininity. Her hair was pulled back in impossibly thick braids that swept away from her face and fell heavily along her shoulders and back. The Duchess was so unlike anything Trist had seen before that a number of people in the crowd simply wept at the wonders the world could offer. Even Talbert, far away as he was halted by what he saw. Only a sharp whistle from Alexander, which managed to cut through both the noise of the crowd and Talbert's own stupor, brought his mind back to his task. From his pocket, he produced a small box of matches. On opening it, he cursed himself for being a fool. He had only five. He had allowed himself to grow concerned with the overall plan that he had forgotten to double-check this small but crucial detail of making sure he had a surplus of matches. He took one more look at the Duchess and struck the first match. Flame bubbled forth, and Talbert applied it to the fuse, which proceeded to spit and spark as the trail of light slowly rose its way up the tower. Turning, Talbert flashed the signal to Alexander. Then he started walking. Three towers left. The bard looked through the crowds trying to find Kestra or Demetrius. It felt like folly, letting their two shortest members get swept up in the throng. But what other choice did they have? He gave the signal that it was time and trusted in Kestra to find it. "Now," she said above the roar of the crowd, having seen Alexander announce that the time was right. She heard Demetrius breathe out deeply and then slowly breathe in. She was about to tell him again when he started muttering the unknown words that preceded his magic. Talbert was at the third tower. His hand was starting to shake due to nerves. He didn't want to risk breaking a match. He forced himself to take a breath and go slowly. There was plenty of time. Each fuse was a different mixture and would move at a different speed. He was keeping time in his head and had moments to spare. Just don't fuck it up. The match struck and the fuse sparked. One tower to go. Talbert fought the urge to run as he walked briskly to the next tower. Demetrius was beginning to sweat. His mutterings were picking up steam. Kestra watched as he pulled out the first of his papers. Funny how she had never noticed that there was a beauty to the intricacy of his glyphs. Just as she noticed it, the paper burned away to ash. Without looking, he brought out the next paper. The rhythm of his voice never stopped. Fuck! The match broke. Stupid! He only had one more. One more match, one more fuse. Don't mess it up. Talbert held his breath and scratched the match. A tiny orange flame broke free. He touched it to the cord, giving life to a spark which raced up the tower. He watched as it danced into the open window. His part was complete. Now he only needed to wait and see if the plan worked. The crowd continued to cheer for Duchess Jatoy. She had a speech prepared, but the crowd was so effusive that their praise that she had yet to begin. It wouldn't have been heard over the adulations. She waited, admiring the decorations the city had placed. They were simple streamers and pennants hung on wire, but it was still a charming effect with them flapping in the breeze. It almost looked like they were moving. She suddenly burst into laughter when she realized they were. That was the simple step, really. Each of the wires connected two towers on a pulley system. Eight towers meant four separate tracks. Talbert had attached counterweights to each fuse. When the fuses finished, the counterweights dropped, pulling the lines across the pulley, moving the streamers. Sure, moving streamers was neat, but it really didn't awe. The movement was just a little added bonus. The awe was where Demetrius came in. He had been hard at work designing his own pennants, complete with their own sigils. Now, as they danced above, the magic began to take hold. The sigils on the pennants began to glow and give way to multicolored smoke. There was something about the sigils that looked familiar, something the crowd had seen before but couldn't quite place. There had been long discussions amongst the deadly troubadours about what type of performance they should give. Typically, this type of event would call for some type of satire or upstaging that casts shame on both parties. But, well, there was no denying that this had been a rough few months for Trist, and, as reluctant as the troubadours were to admit it, there was a way of viewing the matter with the dragon that their actions had possibly played a role in its attack on Trist. With that in mind, they decided that rather than pulling the mood of the city down, lifting up the people's spirits was the way to go. They had all agreed. And what better way to lift up than with butterflies? After a moment of startled quiet, it was the voice of a young child that first rang out. The glowing sigils on the pennants were in the shape of butterflies. With the shaking of the moving line, they appeared to be flying. Just as the crowd started pointing, that was when it happened. The first of the glowing sigils took flight. It shimmered and danced and fluttered down amongst the crowd. Then another fluttered to life, quickly followed by another and another. Soon a shower of golden butterflies took flight and flew above the dazzled crowd. But that wasn't all. Soon after, the parade of butterflies was joined by what looked to be streams of petals, petals particular to the cherry trees beloved by Outer Malfinza. Countless golden butterflies and flowers danced among the crowds, whose cheers never ceased. Talbert smiled. It had worked. They had pulled it off. And now all that was left was his little surprise, which should happen in 3, 2, 1. Banners unfurled from four of the towers. They were simple white fabric with black letters, each bearing an identical message. Trist forever. The deadly troubadours. Kestra smiled. The cocky bastard signed it, she whispered to herself. Around her, she heard people asking who the troubadours were. What did they have to do with today? She allowed a bubble of laughter to stream out. At least they weren't asking about a dragon. It would be nice not being associated with a tragedy. A sudden thunderclap rang out from overhead. Kestra looked up. There were only a few scattered clouds, and none looked to be storm clouds. Why had there been thunder? Then the entire crowd turned silent, confusion sweeping over them. On the stage, the Duchess had collapsed. Already the handmaidens were surrounding her, blocking her from view, but whispers, questions, and speculations were surging through the crowd. Murder! They've murdered the Duchess! The deadly troubadours have murdered Duchess Jatoy! A lone voice roared out. And as one, the panicked crowd began to run.
Hey everyone, this is Brent. If you've been enjoying this podcast, there's a few things I'd like you to do to help me out. First of all, please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, and then go over to Goodreads. At Goodreads, you can rate and review both Deadly Troubadours and Sand, Sea, and Stone. Then you might as well go on over to Facebook and like the Brent Thomas author page. To see what I'm up to, you can follow me on Instagram or at Twitter. Don't worry about all of those addresses, because you know what? They're all going to be in the show notes at the end. You can also go to my website, which is deadlytroubadour.com. If you really want to support me, you know, with cash, you can go to patreon.com/Brent Thomas. If you want to purchase a copy of Deadly Troubadours, you can get a paperback through Amazon, or an ebook anywhere ebooks are sold. Or you can contact me directly for either. Sadly, Sand, Sea, and Stone is not yet available. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. And you know what? Have a great day.